Hi everyone, welcome back to the HR Leaders Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Felicitas Lichtenberg, who's a Global Head of Diversity and Inclusion at SumUp. During the episode, Felicitas shares how SumUp linked their diversity, inclusion and ESG strategies to support education for unemployed youth and minority groups. She also shares the biggest challenges facing diversity and inclusion in the workplace and a top piece of advice for DEI leaders entering the role for the first time. As always, before we jump into the video, make sure you hit the subscribe button, turn on the notification bell and follow on your favorite podcast platform. That being said, let's jump in. Felicitas, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Chris. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I can't believe that like the last time we spoke, it felt like you just started in the role and now it's already been 2 years. How you been?
Great. I know time flies. It's incredible. I still also cannot believe it. But yeah, the 2 years here at SumUp have been great. Many more exciting things ahead. So very looking forward to the future as well.
Amazing. For people that may not be aware of SumUp, tell them a little bit more about the organization and also your role.
So SumUp is a fintech company. We are pretty much worldwide. We help small merchants thrive, setting up their business. You might have seen those little white devices where you can pay contactless in a coffee shop, for example. So this is what we do. We provide card readers, but we also help with an online shop, online payments, QR code invoicing, and so on and so forth. We're about over 3,000 SumUpers now worldwide.
SumUpers, I love it.
Yes, we are. Team SumUp. So my role is I'm the global head of diversity inclusion at SumUp and also working on the ESG sustainability topics.
Yeah. And I suppose on that point, the ESG and sustainability, that's connected very clearly with the company's mission and purpose. What was the inspiration behind targeting this key demographic, you know, as an organization? There's many companies that do similar things that you do, but you have a very specific focus on this area. What was the story behind that?
Yeah, so, I mean, what we thought at SumUp is, of course, we have diversity and it's the right thing to do. We want to drive it further within SumUp, but also we want to have a bigger impact in our ecosystem. So looking at minoritized groups, unemployed youth, you know, entrepreneurs that, you know, need help to thrive. So these are kind of the things that were behind. So if we actually then merge those, we can have a bigger impact in the society through education for minoritized groups, for unemployed youth in Latin America, in India, for example. And so on and so forth. So I think merging those, the aim for, is to actually increase our impact in the society.
Yeah, I love that because it must be really refreshing for you as a DEI leader to come into an organization with this at its core already.
I like it a lot. So it's our purpose, of course. And then we can double down on our efforts. And what I really appreciate about SumUp, of course, we are not perfect, but it's a very empowering culture and atmosphere. So you know, people trust you and you can drive the things you want to do if you believe in them and if you get, of course, the buy-in, but it's a very empowering and refreshing experience.
What's your personal story? How did you come to becoming a DEI leader? How did that, I'm sure, you know, this role probably didn't exist when you probably, when either of us came into the workplace. So tell me that story of how you came to being in this role and in doing this work.
Great question, Chris. And actually, when you ask me this question, I must reflect. I also, you know, not often reflect on the own journey so much, right? So it's a very personal journey. I grew up as, you know, mixed race person in Germany. Now, you know, nowadays probably everything or many countries, many cities are, the population is very mixed race. But back then actually was not so much the case after the whole history. So I'm half German, half Indonesian Chinese. My father was Indonesian. Often people think my mother is Asian, right? But I grew up there. And when I was six, my father went back to Indonesia. And I think, you know, if I wanted to see him, I had to go there. My mom, you know, highest respect and love for my mom because she really helped us to see our father then. But we always, you know, so started to travel back and forth to Indonesia when we were very young. So I think this already, you know, played a part in me. So where do I belong? Being mixed race, I belong, of course, to Germany, but then I got the feedback that I don't belong, right? And then being in Indonesia, it's also was a bit different. So I think until, you know, some years ago, of course, now, but not super many years ago, I really reflected on my own journey and, on my personal self. And then when I did study abroad in America and France and England, and I was always, you know, I felt always to be in this, you know, like minoritized groups, I for some reason always put myself in those positions, probably also situations. And then I, when I started my career actually as IT consultant, I did commercial marketing at a telecommunication company, and then entered by coincidence a little bit the D&I world. I think looking back now, it was always my purpose, my passion, my mission. I knew I wanted to do something like that. But back then, as you said, you know, 10, 15 years ago, this role didn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was a commercial marketing manager, I then started to become an intercultural business trainer. So I, you know, took my money, took my holidays and time off to did this education. I then became an organizational change manager. And also I did some psychology. So it's called systemic transactional analysis.
Oh, wow.
Like 2-3 years. It's a complicated word. But this really, really, I loved a lot and helped me then not only to find my, you know, find out more about myself, but also then led me to this role, to the D&I role. And since then, I have been
wow.
in it.
So what was the first role? How did you transition to that first role? Did you go from not having any experience to straight into a head of D&I role? Like, how did that work?
Yes, not straight to the head of one, but I was actually in commercial marketing. I was in a company. I was like, okay, that's it. You know, after 3.5 years, been there, done that, I need, you know, a change. But then this role got available, the diversity role. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe also some advice or maybe a thought for the listeners. Actually, my mentor, he was not officially my mentor, but a little bit my mentor. Mm-hmm. So he knew I was, you know, interested in this learning development area and culture and, you know, the whole diversity topic. So then he reached out to me actually and said, by the way, the role is going to be available. So I think you should apply for it. And for me, I was like, I'm not so sure. I think, you know, I'm good. I need to take a break. I want to go to the beach, dance outside, work in a little bar, a cafe at the beach. I really saw myself there. But then I reflected on it and I knew this is my role. I need, you know, this is completely my role. So
love
I stepped
it.
From marketing to the D&I role, first the local role for Germany. And then I got, let's say, promoted to the global role. So my last role was I was the global lead for diversity and inclusion at Vodafone Group. And now I'm the global head of diversity.
Love it. No, I love asking that question. Like you said, how often do we get a time to really reflect on our past and how that shaped us and our journey to where we are now? Like, honestly, when I was in, I went to a leadership retreat where and it was around purpose and leading with purpose and understanding your why. And I discovered from having conversations with those other leaders that I'm already living it. And there was a lot of clear signs along my journey here that were very clear that I didn't even see, but others could see. They're like, Chris, can't you see when you did that? That's what led you here. And I was like, oh. I realized I'm already doing it. I'm already living my purpose. And, you know, even though it's not in the same, you know, when I grew up, I wanted to be an artist, right? And in many ways, that's what I do. I create content. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in a different media, but I'm still mm-hmm. using my creative, you know, the areas that I'm really passionate around, but I'm creating in a different medium to deliver value to the global community. And I was like, okay, so I am still using my creative muscles and it's just in a different way as well. And it's delivering impact in a different way. So yeah, super interesting. So like what are some of the ways that you're giving back to society then? I know obviously for you, the education piece for unemployment, youth, minoritized groups, super important. What are some of the things that you're doing?
Yeah, so we are collaborating with an NGO that focuses on Java full stack development for unemployed youth in, globally, but we started off in Brazil. Now we're going to roll it out in Latin America. And actually, according to their data, 80% will find then a job afterwards. So it's Java full stack. We focus especially also on girls, right? Because we know that that's a big challenge. We will have and will have an even probably bigger gap because our how we teach people, our education system,
that's amazing.
It hasn't really been so inclusive so far. But so we look at also girls, LGBTQ plus, and so on and so forth to give them a chance. But we also, what we mentioned, we work with schools in the favelas together in Brazil and some other organizations there. So to have direct impact you know, it's just a little drops, right, on a hot stone, but at least I think we are doing something, and it's very purposeful, very rewarding. It's just also the right thing to do. We collaborate with an NGO called Dharma Life in India. We're financing a tech platform and have reached over 4,000 kids in rural India now already. We want to double down our efforts there as well to distribute content, right? English, math, hygiene mm-hmm. Topics and tech topics as well. So that's something on the whole education piece that we are working on. And also one thing I'm quite passionate about is looking at different dimensions, right? So women and girls, of course, is one thing. LGBTQ plus is the other thing. So I'm quite happy to say that we have about 1% transgender representation. That's sum up 20% about LGBTQ plus overall. But of course, we know that some countries like Bulgaria, right, it's not so common to speak about this topic, and the representation is not very visible yet overall in the society. So what we did this year, we invited company leaders or industry leaders to join our roundtable with our co-founder. This was very powerful. And of course, also joined a conference to speak about this in the society. So yeah, educating, right, the wider society, that's something we are very passionate mm-hmm. about and what we can do more, even looking at our merchants, of course, who help them or offer them, right? We're not there yet, but that's the plan for
love that.
Year.
No, I love it. And do you use, for example, some of those work that you do with NGOs as like a pipeline for yourselves, a talent pipeline?
Mm-hmm. So ideally, yes, we have already as well. So one pilot that we did that the people graduated this year in March, I think it was, we actually hired from that group as well. And of course, we need to balance out a little bit, right? So because how many... So for us, the main thing is giving back to the society, and great if they, you know, we can hire them and
of
they,
course.
They become
like
some of us.
Additional
but
benefit.
If not, and they go somewhere else, also great, right?
So, no, I get it.
At least like giving back, helping them thrive, no matter at SumUp or outside SumUp, we don't really mind as long as they can thrive. And also, yeah, as long as especially people from minoritized groups, from underprivileged background, get some more support from
yeah.
us.
Yeah, but I think regardless, you benefit, right? Because, you know, both internally, people are proud to work at SumUp. They're proud to work for an organization that does that, that gives back, right? And also, especially when people are looking at companies they want to go and work for, when they see the amazing work you're doing in these communities, again, they're like, this is aligned with my why and my purpose. And that's the type of company that I want to work for. Like, how are you communicating all this work internally? What's working best?
So to be honest, at SumUp also, we want to be quite humble, right? So we don't want to speak about it and brag about it.
Really? No, it's not about bragging, though. You should talk about it.
No, I know.
It's great.
We do speak about it, but not so much. I think we can do better, let's say.
Okay.
Or also saying I haven't done a fantastic job in communicating it broadly, but I think we first want to do it. We want to increase have impact, and then we're happy to speak about
it.
Of
course.
So, we have a Global All Hands, for example, where we speak about all projects. And also I invited people from then, you know, India, for example, and Brazil, the participants, to speak and share more about their experience, about their benefits and so on. But yes, I agree. So, I say we can probably communicate better.
But you're living it out first, right? Like we discussed before we went live, you know, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. One of the things that you said about trying to, you know, you shouldn't have to force companies or leaders on this journey. You either want to be on a journey or you don't. But I love what you said about we want to actually deliver first. It isn't about, as you said, you know, just communicating it, talking about it. It's actually the actions. Actions speak louder than words, right? We've heard that saying before.
Yes, I 100% agree. And often, right, sometimes I think the actions are not very authentic because,
yes.
you know, you communicate before, you get recognized, awarded, you know, you get all the praise. But then actually, if you look behind the scene or behind the curtain, then you see either,
yeah.
you know, if it's working or not. And sometimes you don't see it because it's hidden. But yeah, for us, it's very important to get things done first and then speak about it and then also include others on our journey and also learn from others, right? So mm-hmm. we are also constantly learning, and that is what we like to do or want to do. And what you said exactly, so back then, you know, when I started the journey, I thought I need to convince everyone and, you know, every company needs to drive D&I. And of course, ideally, yes. But we spoke about it before, Chris, right? So after, I don't know how many.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
Years have we been speaking about diversity and inclusion now, and if a company, if the leadership of the company still hasn't understood or bought in, then I think what's just important, be transparent, be honest, right? Be authentic. And then the people can decide whether they like to stay there or go somewhere else. I think that is really important to get out of this kind of...
They're trying to tick the box, right? Like they want to be like, they want to show, communicate to their, for their brand, for their customers, for their stakeholders that they are doing something, but they're just ticking a box. There's nothing really behind it. Right.
Or also asking, can you please do it? No, I mean, either they, you know, they're convinced and they do it by now, or yeah, they still haven't understood it. And then maybe it's not the best company if you appreciate diversity.
Yeah. Well, those people leave anyway, right? Listen, I speak to so many chief diversity officers and employees that join those companies and they leave just as fast. So you can sell the dream and say everything, but when the people come in, they will very quickly realize whether that is the truth, mm-hmm. You know?
Yes, and I think we all have to be honest with ourselves, right? So what are our values? What is important for us? It's, you know, during a lifetime, it's important maybe for some that to earn money, right? And probably for everyone, but, you know, maybe you make certain cuts, right? In terms of what is super important to you, what is not. But if these things are really, really important to you, then, you know, also take ownership, right? And look for a place where they celebrate it or live it more. Instead of, you know, I think we also sometimes need to get out of the complaining, but taking action and also responsibility, not only as leaders for an organization, but also as employees, right?
That's true.
Being employed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. What would you say, you've been doing this for a while now in so many different companies. What would you say is right now are the main challenges facing diversity and inclusion in the workplace?
Very good question. So I think a couple of things to consider here. So as D&I leader, I think endurance is one of the big big topics, because you, of course, we need to repeat, right? You need to start from the beginning again and again, same conversations over a long time, patience, and of course, you know, conviction, and also, of course, influencing others to then buy into this if they haven't understood it yet, which is also possible if they have never been confronted with that topic before, right? So create a safe space to learn from each other, with each other. And I think that is that is a super important thing, and also a constant, let's say.
I never really thought about that, to be honest, because yeah, you're right. So you've always got a new flow of organizations coming into the business, new leaders coming into the business. So that conversation needs to be constantly evolving and happening, and a big part of your role to your success, like you said, is influencing. Is that something you knew going in that would be so important, your influencing skills?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was a little bit aware of it, but it is, of course, to a broader scale, right? Because you do need to influence pretty much everyone for various parts. And you know, Chris, I think also one thing that is important to mention is that we are all biased, of course, right? We
sure.
All are brought up in a certain way, no matter if you're white, black, you know, yellow, or like Asian, whatever you want to call it, man, woman, non-binary, you know, TQI. So we are all biased, and our families are all biased, and the way we brought up, and you know, it is, again, we need to create a safe space where we can share different experiences, and we are protected to make mistakes as well, to some extent, because we will all make mistakes. I impose, unfortunately, microaggressions, right? You will do so, others will do so, no matter which background. So I think it's important to be able to have a safe space to then learn from each other, and also reflect on our own biases, our own upbringing, what are our drivers in life, you know, when are we okay, let's say, with each other or with ourselves. Yeah, but it's a whole psychology topic here.
No, I get it. Well, talking about psychology, you mentioned earlier about talking about the psychology behind okay positions. Could you elaborate on that for a little bit for everyone? Because it was new for me.
Yeah, so I mean, if you imagine like four quadrants, right? And in one quadrant, then there's this I'm not okay, you're not okay kind of position. Yeah, like, bear with me, I go through it. And then, so no matter what we do, you know, I never appreciate myself, but I also never appreciate you, for example. Mm-hmm. Then there's one quadrant that, you know, where I say, okay, I'm okay, you're okay. So I appreciate myself, I respect and appreciate you as well. That's the other quadrant. Then the third one could be, I'm not okay, but you're okay, for example, right? So I make myself down all the time, but I admire the way you are, you know, and I find you very inspiring. You are the great, you know, the way that I would love to be, but I'm not, basically. Or the one where I say, no, I'm the good one and you're the bad one, right? but sometimes, so I'm maybe potentially disrespectful to whatever you say, right? I don't like the way you are, but I pretend I like the way I am. It's the right way, no matter which gender I have or, you know, orientation mm-hmm. or identity. But sometimes actually below that, it's a deep feeling of being insecure, actually not feeling okay, but I'm protecting it, right? So I pretend I'm
we all do that at certain points, right?
So I think this also plays a big role, right, in how we communicate with each other, especially if we communicate with people that are very different to us. And maybe, you know, we have all our lives learned, oh, that person is not okay, or people from these backgrounds are not okay, right? So we need to make new, we need to learn, educate ourselves, also make new experiences. And be reflect also, right, on our behaviors.
Mm-hmm. So is that, when would you use that quadrant in like a one-to-one or sort of training managers and leaders?
Yeah, it depends. So sometimes in one-on-one conversations or, you know, when I have a group and I feel that the conversation is not very constructive, for example, right? Or if I feel that there's some lack of appreciation happening.
Sure.
So then I sometimes give them the idea or the concept, I put it on the wall, mm-hmm. And then let them reflect on where they are at the moment. And when they communicate to someone, in which quadrant they are or the other person might be.
Yeah, that's a great way of positioning it, right? Because then you can figure out, okay, this is where we are right now, objectively, because sometimes you don't really know, you've put a label on it, right? and this is the kind of how we can now proceed. And here's some language, some questions, mm-hmm. points that we can make to progress conversation. Yes. Yeah.
And can I just give one other example?
Sure, yeah.
Because last week I was in Brazil and we had a session on diversity and inclusion and mental health. And actually there was a very powerful story that people shared from being LGBTQ+, for example, you know, being not accepted by one of the parents and having suicidal thoughts even, right, to someone that is from the Black community and that actually got abused at home by the stepfather, right? And it was all then focusing on creating awareness that we all go through different, you know, challenges in life, some more probably, right, more mm-hmm. heavy than others. But we all do to some extent. And sometimes the way we behave or communicate has nothing to do with, for example, you know, what you say to me and I react in a certain way, but maybe I am protecting myself because of past experiences, right? So actually a leader came to me afterwards and said, Felicitas, thank you. I mean, this was very powerful because that person was in my team back then. And I always gave the feedback, why are you so closed? You know, you're not very a team player and so on. But now, of course, I understand and I'll apologize, right? So it's just being also sensitive and aware of what I do or I say has sometimes nothing to do with how you react, right? But it's the whole how many years of our lives that shape us and that we just need to be kind to each other.
Mm-hmm. It's so important, right? Because there's so many examples where you could someone's acting a particular way and you could take it as, oh, they just don't care. But it's maybe a defense mechanism of way they're protecting themselves, right? Like if I open up too much, then I leave myself vulnerable, could be an example, right? And someone who's been hurt in the past from they've been vulnerable when someone's taken advantage of that. Okay, from now on, I'm going to protect myself by just not being vulnerable and not opening up, not letting someone get close to me. And that does affect everything in the workplace, you know? Mm-hmm. It transitions over. Similar with me, my challenge with anxiety and panic attacks and my mental health issues. Before, I would just be quiet, and the team would not come and speak to me because they think, oh, Chris is in a bad mood today. So let me not go to Chris today. He's in a bad mood. But I was struggling that day. I felt a bit anxious, mm-hmm. a bit overwhelmed. And rather than communicating that, my team took it as Chris doesn't care. He doesn't, you know, he's angry today. whereas it wasn't. I was actually needed help. You know, I needed mm-hmm. support as well. So if you create a workplace where people can have those conversations and be vulnerable, we can all kind of see each other from a different viewpoint.
I love that. Thank you for sharing, Chris. I also didn't know that about you. And also, it's not about, you know, a company or a leader, you know, of course, we're not therapists, right? And we cannot rescue those people or sure. you know, give them and we can listen and then refer them, right? Or give them recommendation. It's okay not to be okay. And it's okay, mm-hmm. you know, you can reach out to this, therapist, for example, to get more guidance on it and so on. So just being a supporting network, then of course, mm-hmm. Psychologist or so. But yeah, I think it's super important.
You've built multiple HD&I organizations in businesses. What would be your top advice for your HR colleagues who are coming into an organization and building a D&I function from scratch? What are the top, say, three things they need to focus their time on?
Listen to people, conduct focus groups, for example, and understand the data. So that's a whole understanding around it, right? Listen to them and look at the data that you have.
Is that pulse surveys you mean? Like, what do you mean by data?
It can be, surveys, can be focus groups, okay. can be the data that you have in your systems, looking at the female share representation, for example.
Sure.
We actually once a year run a D&I survey where we actually measure ethnicity, LGBTQ+ representation, and so on and so forth, which of course is sensitive across the markets, but we managed to do so. So the whole understand the insights, the people, the data around it. Then I think the whole pillar of education, right? And, you know, among this or below this can come e-learning journey, inclusive leadership workshops, webinars around LGBTQ+, racism at work, neurodiversity, domestic violence and abuse, and so on. That's what we did, right, throughout the year, basically. Creating that. But of course, it's also then impact, right? And then leadership buy-in, leadership support. We have active networks and we have leadership sponsors that, are there to listen, but also our founders and our CEOs of the countries, they actually take time and have what we call drop-in sessions for the networks to come and share their point of view. So I think that is something. And then, of course, clear commitments, right, that we need. So probably these are the three.
Looking back, what would you have done differently looking back?
Very nice question, Chris. I need to look back for that to think about it.
You're like, I don't want to remember it anymore.
I think looking back, what would I have done different? I mean, let me put it two ways, if it's okay. So first in my life or in my career, mm-hmm. and then
great.
And I
amazing.
Did that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think looking back in my career, trust myself more, like believe in myself and trust myself more. It really helped me to look for a mentor, right? And have this kind of supporting network myself, but also saying no. So I always thought I need to please others, you know, because of certain things that play in my mind and in myself. But I think it's okay also to leave an organization. It's okay to leave a bad manager if they're toxic or if they're not, encouraging, not supporting. I always thought I need to try hard. I need to please others. I need to show that I can do it. And I didn't know that there are different options out there, right? That this is maybe not the norm that, you know, so this is something I think I made bad experiences early on in my career, which also have shaped me, which of course is great to understand.
Yeah.
But I think this is what I would have done different to leave if I, you know, if I don't feel well mm-hmm. Under certain leadership. That's the one thing in my career. In my D&I role, I think you might see I have a strong driver, please others, but I think also it's okay not to please others, right? Or it's okay if also people don't like you, or it's okay if...
You can't please everyone.
It's okay not to please anyone. Yeah. So I always thought I need to do everything for everyone, but you don't. And yeah, that's, I think,
what I've heard that from quite a few D&I leaders.
Yeah.
Because you're really trying to please everyone, right? And it's impossible.
It's impossible, and also not helpful, because, you know, there might be groups or leaders or whatever it is that have the potential to drive things forward, right? But there are many or some that don't. And then sometimes those are the ones who always complain, and, you know, but you can do whatever you want to, and
you never win them over.
You will never win them.
Mm-hmm.
And either they get out of their vicious circle or they're not, but then leave them and focus on those that give you, you know, help you drive the things, have energy, have the potential to drive things. This would probably be.
And sometimes, let's be honest, sometimes the best result is for them to move on, and that's in their best interest. And it's also for you. And that's a positive thing.
Yes.
You know, because the last thing you want to do is try to, you know, constantly be trying to get them aboard. They're rejecting you, there's frustration there, and it's just not good for anyone, not for good for them, the business, their teams as well. And I know that's an ongoing battle in your role that never ends. Listen, before I let you go, what would be your sort of parting piece of advice to new DI leaders that are just kind of stepping into the role for the first time? And then where can people connect with you? And then we'll say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Super. Great question as well. Actually, recently, some people reached out to me with that question, because they asked, or they shared, there's an opportunity in the D&I field, but they feel insecure. They feel not ready for it yet. They don't know how to get it or what to do there. And my advice is, you know, you're never ready. And also, you're always learning. So don't think you have to be the perfect D&I leader. Nobody is perfect, and nobody ever will be perfect. And we are all learning. If you really want to do it, just go for it and try it out, and be patient with yourself and also with others, right? So I think that is something, yeah, we are all biased, we are all learning, nobody's perfect, and just follow your passion.
Mm-hmm. We said before the call, didn't we, as well, it's important to also give yourself grace as well. Yeah. So it's just an important one if you're going to survive.
Yes, be kind to yourself.
And be kind to yourself, to others. Yes. Listen, well, look, thanks so much for coming on. Where can people reach out? LinkedIn, is that the best place?
Yes, perfect. LinkedIn would be great. Felicitas Lichtenberg you can find me under that name. And looking forward to connecting to all of you. And
amazing.
Thank you so much, Chris. I always love speaking to you, and thank you for having me.
No, I'm really happy for you. Honestly, I remember when you first joined and we had our conversation, and you had you've come so far in just the last 2 years. I'm proud for you and the team. Keep up the amazing work. Great. And I look forward to doing it again soon, but I wish you all the best.
Yes, let's go. Let's do this.
Thanks.
Same for you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.